जय राधा माधव पंजाबी हारी, जय गोपी चन भाला भा गिरिवाद धा, यशोर नंदना गज जन रंजना, यशोर नंदना गज जन रंजना, यमुना तीरा ब्रह्मचारी गोपी जन भाला भा गिरिवर धारी, यशोर नंदना ब्रज जन रंजना, यशोर नंदना गज जन रंजना, थी बनना थी बनना Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Thank you.
Paramahansa Hari Vrakacharya Astotarasata Shri Sriman His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the lotus feet of Shri Shri Guru and Gauravanda. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, second canto, creation. Second canto is creation. Chapter 6, Purusha Shukta confirmed, text 8. Apamduryasya sarghasya Parjanyasya prajapate Dumsa shishna upashtastu Rajadhyananda nirvite Pambhiryasya sargasya Rajanyasya prajapate Umsa shishna upashtastu Rajadhyananda nirvite Pambhiryasya sargasya Arjanyasya prajapate Umsa shishna upashtastu Rajadhyananda nivrite. Please chant. Rajadhyananda nivrite Apambhiryasya sargasya Rajanyasya prajapate Vamsa shishna upasthastu Rajadhyananda nivrite. Anybody else? Okay. Apam of water. Niryasya of the semen. Sargasya of the generative. Parjanyasya of veins. Prajapate of the creator. Kumsa of the Lord. Shishna, the genitals. Upastatu, the place where the genitals are situated. Vijati, due to begetting. Ananda, pleasure. Nivritte, cause. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. From the Lord's genitals originate water, semen, generatives, rains, and the procreators. His genitals are the cause of a pleasure that counteracts the distress of begetting. Please repeat. From the Lord's genitals originate water, semen, generatives, rains, and the procreators. His genitals are the cause of a pleasure that counteracts the distress of begetting. Purport. The genitals and the pleasure of begetting counteract the distresses of family encumbrances. One would cease to generate altogether if there were not, by the grace of the Lord, a coating, a pleasure-giving substance on the surface of the generative organs. This substance gives a pleasure so intense that it counteracts fully the distress of family encumbrances. A person is so captivated by this pleasure-giving substance that he is not satisfied by begetting a single child, but increases the number of children with great risk in regard to maintaining them simply for this pleasure-giving substance. This pleasure-giving substance is not false, however, because it originates from the transcendental body of the Lord. In other words, the pleasure-giving substance is a reality, but it has taken on an aspect of pervertedness on account of material contamination. In the material world, sex life is the cause of many distresses on account of material contact. Therefore, the sex life in the material world should not be encouraged beyond the necessity. There is a necessity for generating progeny, even in the material world. But such generation of children must be carried out with full responsibility for spiritual values. The spiritual values of life can be realized in the human form of material existence. And the human being must adopt family planning with reference to the context of spiritual values and not otherwise. The degraded form of family restriction by use of contraceptives and so on is the grossest type of material contamination. Materialists who use these devices want to fully utilize the pleasure potency of the coating on the genitals by artificial means without knowing the spiritual importance. And without knowledge of spiritual values, the less intelligent man tries to utilize only the material sense pleasure of the genitals. Om Jnanati Nirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kada Mahiyam Dadati Svapadantikam Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Garadhara Shivas Adigau Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Sya Kokutubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Vyeva Cha Patitanam Pavanevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Namaha. So thank you all for coming to Bhagavatam class today. I was a little sad when I saw Damodar Prabhu come in because it looked like the internet was off this morning. And I was relieved, but I think it's back on. Is it? Hare Krishna. So what to do? We don't pick our own verses. But just a reminder about what topic we're studying in the Srimad Bhagavatam. It's the universal form of the Lord. And so we've discussed and heard in previous verses how this universal form is more or less imaginary. In different ways, because it's temporary, or because to see the sun as his eye and the moon as his mind, and different sections of the universe and planets, it's not the same as Krishna's personal form, but it's to give impersonalists some personal conception of the Lord. So I thought of so many things. One nice thing about volunteering to be on the class schedule is you find out several weeks ahead of time what your verse is. And so then you're going around through your daily life and reading and hearing, and so many things come into your mind that, this is relevant to that, and that is relevant. So one of the things that I thought of was from the first canto, first chapter, first verse of Srimad Bhagavatam, which happens to mention in the verse itself that by him, by Krishna, by the son of Vasudeva, by him, even the great sages and demigods are placed into illusion, as one is bewildered by the illusory representations of water seen in fire, or land seen on water. Only because of him do the material universes, temporarily manifested by the reactions of the three modes of nature, appear factual, although they are unreal. I therefore meditate upon him, Lord Sri Krishna, who is eternally existent in the transcendental abode, which is forever free from the illusory representations of the material world. I meditate upon him, for he is the absolute truth. Such a beautiful verse, and a very long purport. And towards the, I think probably the very last paragraph, I didn't print out the whole purport, but the last paragraph, or one of the last, Srila Prabhupada writes this. Srila Vishvanath Chakravarti Thakur specifically deals with the original and pure sex psychology, Adiras, devoid of all mundane inebriety. The whole material, this is in italics in Prabhupada's Bhagavatam, the whole material creation is moving under the principle of sex life. In modern civilization, no more italics, sex life is the focal point for all activities. Wherever one turns his face, he sees sex life predominant. Therefore, sex life is not unreal. Its reality is experienced in the spiritual world. The material sex life is but a perverted reflection of the original fact. The original fact is in the absolute truth, and thus the absolute truth cannot be impersonal. It is not possible to be impersonal and contain pure sex life. Consequently, the impersonalist philosophers have given indirect impetus to the abominable, mundane sex life because they have overstressed the impersonality of the absolute truth. Consequently, man, without information of the actual spiritual form of sex, has accepted perverted material sex life as the all-in-all. There is a distinction between sex life in the diseased material condition and spiritual sex life. So I just thought that was so succinct, and it made me remember the reason for Shankaracharya Prabhu's advent and his preaching was not only to lead people who had become Buddhists, because Lord Buddha was preaching against animal sacrifice, he led people away from the Vedas. Shankaracharya came to bring them back to the Vedas and also for propagation, you know, more population. And this is the reason why there's more population, because by preaching an impersonal point of view, nobody has any idea that you can have a loving relationship, a romantic relationship with the Supreme Lord. Or you could aspire to have the relationship of a mother or father or friend, playmate of the Supreme Lord. And so they're thinking, oh, spiritual life means boring, impersonal, white light. Let me find someone here that I can have a real relationship with. But that real relationship is not real. It's false. It's only a shadow. It's only a reflection, as we hear in Bhagavad Gita, the banyan tree with its roots upward and its branches down. So all the activities in the material world are a reflection, a perverted reflection of the spiritual world. So that was something. I was a little stymied by this description about the pleasure-giving substance being so intense, that gives a, giving a pleasure so intense that it counteracts fully the distress of family encumbrances. So I thought, gee, I didn't raise a family in this lifetime. I should ask my friends who have. So yesterday, in the morning, I asked for some help. And I got a little bit response. I asked in two different ways. The first time, because the phrase, I think in the, the Bhagavatam that I have, it's, anyway. So I said, a question for parents. What does the phrase, the distress of family encumbrances, bring to mind? And I got one answer from a father who's now unfortunately divorced. I never saw my family as giving me distress through encumbrances. Of course, it was work. Being the nighttime parent, going to work all day, going to all the extracurriculars and so on, but I saw it as service. It helped take me out of the mindset of thinking I was the center of the universe. Instead, I was entrusted to serve these spirit souls who had taken birth as my children in this life. I tried to see them as parts and parcels of Krishna and understand that my duty as a householder was to protect and serve them. Service is not an encumbrance. It is an opportunity to surrender to a higher cause. The involuntary loss of that family, now that has encumbrances, trauma, and grief. That requires some transcendence, working on it. And the other response I got from that particular question, I see it as about the difficulties that obstruct the performance of family duties. For example, family members may disagree about what should be done, or there may be a shortage of income available to support the family. So I thought, oh, this is great. All my, except for a few high school people that I've somehow again become in contact with about 10 years ago, all my Facebook friends are devotees. So when you ask about family encumbrances, they're not going to tell you the things that, you know, it's seen from a devotional viewpoint, which isn't exactly the way today's verse went. But then I asked a slightly different way. I said, if parents could share some of the difficulties they've had raising children, and I promised not to share their names. So I just want to read you this one because I think anybody that's had raised children or even watched other people raise children can understand these things happen. I experience challenges with my kids every single day of my life. I love my kids, and I thought that I will be a sweet, loving mother. But in the meantime, I experience pain because I get so overwhelmed with all the things that we need to do and want for doing our best, results in frustration when they demand more or in other aspects. I have so many examples. And then, after I get mad and maybe yell at them or say something hard, I find myself in a hell of guilt and pain. I think I will mess them up. I am afraid for them to have consequences for what I did. And so every day I have to try to do my best and don't get so mad at them for little things. Be careful with my words and acts and don't reflect all my fears and ideals on them. It's so hard for me, and sometimes I get exhausted. And then she also mentioned how providing enough money was difficult. You know, always going and coming, making sure they're fed and dressed. So that's one of the kinds of ways bringing up children is difficult. One of my old friends from Gitanagri said, you can use my name, but I'm not going to. But he put a little video clip of a rock song that I wasn't familiar with, but the lyrics were, money, 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 money. Okay, so this is one of the difficulties of raising children. But I have many quotes from different books because I was so nervous about giving this class. But because I brought up the subject of the difficulties of raising children, I wonder if anybody who is a parent wants to add. Thakur, can he have a mic? I mean to say Saranga Thakur Prabhu. Hi, Bill.
Thank you for your courage and surrender.
Thank you.
I'm wondering if it's easier to perceive the difficulties when you're a grandparent.
Speak into the mic.
I'm wondering if it's easier to perceive the difficulties of raising children when you're a grandparent. Because it might be hard for the parents to admit that the children can be a burden.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like I've raised one daughter, and the raising never really stops. There are right. Different ages, different challenges, heartbreaks, anxieties are always there. And of course, Krishna consciousness does provide the meaning, the goal, you know, and everything.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Yeah, I think that's a good point. And you reminded me also, I do have a son, but I didn't give birth to him when he was 21 and I was 47 and doing a preaching thing in the college that he was attending. We bonded as mother and son. So shortly after, he gave me a little small book called Mothers, and it had different little sayings and quotes, but the one that I remember from this book is, when you make a decision to become a mother, or we can say also parent, father, it's like making a decision to have your heart walk around outside of your body for the rest of your life. So being a grandparent also, you can't do anything to change the situation, but you're feeling for them. Go ahead, Sukada Prabhu.
I say that, you know, the attachment as a parent is so strong that you feel, you know, like you're saying, your heart, you feel their pain and right. Their pleasure.
Right.
So it's very difficult that you constantly have to remind yourself that they're not really yours. They're Krishna's, and Krishna has a plan for everyone because you'd like everything to go perfectly for your child. You know, you're willing to sacrifice everything, things to go well, but that is not the way life goes.
Right.
So for me, that's the hardest part. And I always having to remind myself, Krishna is in control,
right.
Not me.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Ragatmika, ji.
I have to remind myself not to pray for liberation.
Hare Krishna.
But right. To be grateful.
To be grateful
and patient, right. Waiting on Krishna's mercy to reveal what I'm supposed to learn through this.
Thank you.
Ordeal.
Have to remind ourselves not to pray for liberation. Yeah, that's good. And to expect Krishna's mercy whenever it may reveal itself. Somebody has the mic? Okay. Sudevi.
Vega with the, you remember Lila Katha in Gita Nagari?
Yes.
One time her parents came to visit.
Yes.
And you were telling them, oh, your daughter is so nice. You must have raised her very nicely. So the mother said, oh, just like every other parent, I fed her, I gave her clothes and worry about her.
So I fed her, gave her clothes and
worry about her. So that's, I can, every parent can.
Right.
I just do that.
Right.
You cannot stop but worrying.
Yeah, thank
either
you.
Either they are well or not well, but you're just going to worry, that's
yeah.
all.
Yeah, good one. Actually, your husband was one of the people who responded to me, and one of the things he said was, you do have experience, but from the other side, you have the experience of the pain you caused your parents. I was like, oh, okay, that was big. So, Tucker.
Another thing I thought of, which we basically mentioned, it's like an ongoing personal growth seminar, and the relationship, the children can trigger all of our issues, our weaknesses, which creates another anxiety.
Right, right. Actually, you just reminded me. In Vrindavan, at least, I used to hear that in Vrindavan, as part of the purification, Srimati Radharani will hold a mirror up to you to show you what you need to work on. And if you won't look at it, she shows it to everyone else. And so I think you've just reminded me that children can act on her behalf in that respect. Any more? Radhatmika.
I do experience the great benefit and mercy of the morning program that Srila Prabhupada has given us. We can bathe in this divine energy every day to relieve us from the distresses of this material experience. Yesterday I saw a quote. It said, love is not determined by who you live with, but who you can't live without.
Oh.
So I thought, oh my gosh.
Krishna.
Maybe I do have a little problem for Krishna.
Right.
Right. I can't live without this morning program,
yeah.
The chanting, the right. Holy name.
Right.
Bhagavatam.
That's beautiful. Thank you so much. Actually, I'll reference one of the verses that came to my mind, and Vishaya Venivartante Niraharasya Dehina Rasavajamaso Pyasya Param Drista Nivartate, Bhagavad Gita 2:59. Though the embodied soul may be restricted from sense enjoyment, the taste for sense objects remains. But ceasing such engagements by experiencing a higher taste, he is fixed in consciousness. So all of us have the experience, you know, we know what the material world is. We've been attracted to it. We've dwelled in it. We still have to do so much of our lives interacting. But Prabhupada described in the purport, unless one is transcendentally situated, it is not possible to cease from sense enjoyment. The process of restriction from sense enjoyment by rules and regulations is something like restricting a diseased person from certain types of eatables. The patient, however, neither likes such restrictions nor loses his taste for eatables. And so he goes on, but he says, but one who has tasted the beauty of the Supreme Lord Krishna in the course of his advancement in Krishna consciousness no longer has a taste for dead material things. Therefore, restrictions are there for the less intelligent neophytes in the spiritual advancement of life. But such restrictions are only good until one actually has a taste for Krishna consciousness. When one is actually Krishna conscious, he automatically loses his taste for pale things. So all the varied sense enjoyments of the material world do become pale. And you know, those, everybody here and listening online, why would someone be listening if they weren't interested in Krishna consciousness? We've all tasted the to some degree, the higher taste of Krishna consciousness, and it's enabled us to stay on the path, like Raghavendra was saying, so grateful to have Krishna's holy name. And because I've been thinking about, parents and children and the distress of family, and then to come yesterday to the temple and last week too, on Wednesdays now, all the Bana schools come to the temple, and it's just so wonderful to see these children that are raised in a Krishna conscious atmosphere. And of course they'll still have difficulties, of course they'll become teenagers. So many things will happen that will make us, you know, tend to want liberation from this particular moment or quandary, but they're all getting the taste of offering candles, offering lamps to the Lord, seeing the Lord, bringing little gifts, seeing the rabbits kiss the Lord's feet, all the different things that attract us about, and kirtan and friendships. I see these, I'm on the lady side, so I'm seeing many times, one little girl will come in, she'll go up to her classmate, just look at her, touch her, and then they hug each other, and then the other one. These friendships formed in childhood with Krishna in the center, how valuable they are. We have some here that have grown up in such a situation and are now raising their own children. So much bright hope for the future to be able to give the world a taste of the happiness of Krishna consciousness, which alone will enable people to be able to gradually let go of the lesser taste. Stitadi, you're here and you haven't said anything.
Okay.
Oh, I'm sorry. Duncan Ryan actually had his hand up, so let him go first. I didn't see you people when I called Stitadi's name.
I just wanted to mention one thing. Talk about the pain of beginning. Labor.
Right.
A woman has to go through labor.
Right.
And that seems to me pretty painful.
Oh, yeah. I haven't done it in this.
We don't have to suffer that.
Right, yeah. Right.
To me, that's scary.
Right, right, yeah. Yeah, I think they've done surveys. Women generally have a higher tolerance for pain than men, although we send the men to war to be killed in battle. So what to do? Thank you. Stitadi Muni Prabhu.
Okay, so you were saying how in this life you didn't have to deal with directly raising a little...
Toddler.
Toddler, yeah.
Correct.
Okay, so would you say your life has been more or less hassle-free than the other folks who may have jumped into the deep dark well, as the 5-year brahmacharis like to say?
Actually, I can think of a couple responses to that. So the first one is, I remember 30-some years ago sitting in the Philadelphia temple, I'm sure you were still there then, I was sitting next to Vishakha at breakfast, and she didn't have any children yet. And she may very well have been pregnant, but I didn't know that. So a child went screaming through the room where we were all eating breakfast, and I made some snarky remark about celibacy. And Vishakha, with her ultimate wisdom, she said, celibate people are screaming on the inside. Touché. But then I also have to say that I do feel extremely grateful that because of not having had those responsibilities, I've been able to spend a lot of time in the Holy Dham and just, you know, attend many seminars and hear so much. We all have the opportunity of hearing, but it's definitely easier for someone that doesn't have children to bring up and feed and clothe and educate to go. And so I feel very, very fortunate in that way. Okay?
Yeah. Well, one thought is coming to me. It seems.
Put the mic closer to your mouth.
It seems like, you know, we got this life and we got certain things we're going to have to learn. And, you know, and it's like you go this way or that way, you're still going to have to find those lessons.
Right. Yeah, that's good. That's really good. Thank you.
I just want to touch on the divorce itself, where it says the genitals of the Lord is the source of the progenitors also.
Right.
So that reminds, that seems to be Brahma and then the other progenitors really. But from Brahma came like the
Prajapatis.
Ten sons who were part of the progenitors also. Not Kashyapa, but Atri Muni, and so many of them, Narad, and the rest of them, I don't remember them, you know, but Brahma himself came from the lotus, you remember?
Right.
From the lotus of the Lord, but yes. Anyhow, I guess...
entire universe was created by Lord Brahma, who was born from... Krishna's abdomen.
But I guess it's still significant, you know, that from that universe, from that Virat Purusha, the genitals springs the progenitors.
Right, right, yeah. Right. Well, yes. I remember one time. A few of us only were together for the Bhagavatam class time at Gita Nagari, and the verse was something about Kashyapa Muni and one of his wives giving birth to like lizards and snakes, and I mean, you're just like, what do you do with it? We just have to accept it because it's Bhagavatam, but our material minds can't understand at all. But actually, you reminded me, one of the many quotes I printed out in my terror at having to speak on this verse, I was reading Krishna book before taking rest one night, and on the wall opposite, there were two different pictures of Krishna Balaram, one B.G. Sharma and one from our own Annapurna artist. Beautiful pictures. And I looked at Krishna Balaram and I said, you have to help me. You have to help me. And so then I just kept on reading where I was, and where I was reading was Akrura's return journey after he went and picked Krishna up from Vrindavan, and the gopis were so angry and cursing him that why are you called Akrura? That means not cruel. Actually, you're very cruel. You're taking away the life of our life. So anyway, they got on the chariot. He's driving the chariot. They stop, go in the river to bathe. They come back. Now Akrura goes to bathe. He just left them on the chariot. He goes in the river to bathe. And there are Krishna Balaram in the water. He's like, wait a minute, I just saw them on the chariot. So he goes back to the chariot and they're just sitting there smiling. He goes back into the water again, and this time it's Lord Vishnu lying on the Sesha Naga and being worshipped by all kinds of demigods, and he's just blown away completely. And so he offers a lot of prayers, and in one of the prayers, I mean, it's so beautiful. If we could just read all day, we could read the whole chapter. But one of the parts of his prayers was, my dear Lord, the whole world is filled with the three modes of material modes of nature, namely goodness, passion, and ignorance. Everyone within this material world is covered by these modes, from Lord Brahma down to the non-moving plants and trees. My dear Lord, I offer my respectful obeisances unto you, because you are beyond the influence of the three modes. except for you, everyone is being carried away by the waves of these modes. My dear Lord, fire is your mouth, the earth is your feet, the sun is your eye, the sky is your navel, and the directions are your ears. Space is your head, the demigods are your arms, the oceans and seas are your abdomen, and the winds and air are your strength and vitality. All the plants and herbs are the hairs on your body, the clouds are the hair on your head, the mountains are your bones and nails, the days and nights are the blinking of your eyelids, Prajapati, the progenitor, is your genitals, and the reins are your semen. So, you know, even Akrura, you know, and then he comes back to the chariot. I remember in an old Back to Godhead, there was a black and white, like a comic strip, you know, like pictographic literature, I believe it's called. And Krishna's looking right out of the picture. He's actually looking at Akrura, but he's looking with this smile out of the picture at you. And he's saying, my dear Akrura, have you seen something wonderful in water or in space? And Akrura says, my dear Lord, when I have seen you, what wonderful things have I not seen? Yeah, so anyway, yeah, the universal form.
Yeah, one more quick point. Yeah, like the force of sex life is like a shackle also. The whole...
Like a what?
It's like a shackle. The shackle is
totally.
Of sex life, you know?
Right.
They're not only in the human species, but all the animal species. You know, like every month, all the males, they're fighting.
Oh, right.
You know,
right. The deer testing each other's strength with their
everything.
Antlers.
It's such a powerful force, you know what I mean? It's like... Psh, yeah.
Right. Yeah, actually, go ahead, Thakur. Well, this is where I'm reading in the fourth canto at home, just little by little. And so the last few verses, I keep seeing things that were so very relevant. But one of them, where did it go? It was text 85, wasn't it? Here we go. Just what you said. This is in the purport, fourth canto, chapter 29, text 85. The word striya, meaning along with the wife, is significant. The male and female living together constitute the sum and substance of material existence. The attraction between male and female in this material world is very strong. In all species of life, the attraction between male and female is the basic principle of existence. The same principle of intermingling is also in human society, but in a regulative form. Material existence means living together as male and female and being attracted by one another. However, when one fully understands spiritual life, his attraction for the opposite sex is completely vanquished. By such attraction, one becomes overly attached to this material world. It is a hard knot within the heart. Yeah, and the next chapter here is Paranjana becomes a woman in his next life, so what to do.
And that was a perfect quote. I was just thinking how our relationship with all the senses are similar. They push,
right,
you know, for gratification, and the mind imagines, you know, some satisfaction, and somehow it remains, within real satisfaction remains just out of reach.
Right, like the donkey following the carrot.
And so our indulgence with any of the senses creates complications, miseries.
Right. When I got initiated, I was in LA at the time, and so I asked someone in the Sanskrit department what my name meant, Vegavati. And they said, oh, it means one who can control the pushings. And I'm the servant of such a person. Because I wasn't thinking the Dasi, I just thought, oh, Krishna, you know, how ironic or whatever. But because I use that name at work, like if I'm talking to the printer to print something out for TOVP, I said, I'm Vegavati Dasi. But I told her she can call me Vega for short. So then when she sent the invoice, it was Vega Dasi. And I had to tell her, I wrote an email and I said, Vega's a nickname, but when you say Vega Dasi, it has a different meaning. Could you please make it Vega Viti Dasi? And so she corrected, because I don't want to become officially the servant of the different pushing agents. I want to serve Srila Prabhupada, who knows how to control them, and gradually learn to do that too. Go ahead, you have the mic.
Just another thing I thought of, it's related. The idea of a higher taste.
Uh-huh.
And I can see there would be different levels of that. There's always something to be attracted to in Krishna consciousness. But what to do in terms of attachments before we have the higher taste we need to give them up?
What came in my mind as you were asking that question was the glass of ink, and you pour milk, and you just keep pouring milk, and you keep pouring milk, and you keep pouring milk, and after some long time, you have a glass of milk, and there's no more ink. We understand theoretically that we're not this body. But for most of us, it's mostly theoretical. But we've understood enough that we come to the temple, we chant our rounds, we read Srimad Bhagavatam, we take prasadam, join the kirtan, and all these things are imperceptibly purifying our hearts. Acheto dharpanam arjanam. What is it? When someone's in the shower, you can't criticize them for being dirty. We're taking the process. It will have its effect. We don't know how powerful this process is. Actually, when Anuttama Prabhu was here the other day, I wanted to ask him something, but I couldn't get the opportunity. He was always talking with someone. But one not long ago, maybe last time I was in Mayapur, Rukmini, I met her on the stairs of the room where they give the Bhagavatam class in English. And she told me that Anuttama Prabhu's mother had passed away, and shortly afterwards he had a dream where his mother said, "Thank you so much. I just love it here." We don't know where she was, but she was in a really nice place, and she was acknowledging that it was because of him that she was there. So I just give that as a little tiny testimony. We've seen devotees leave their bodies in wonderful circumstances. And we know their destination is glorious. And so is ours. We're just not at that point exactly yet. Is that okay? Okay. Okay, I think it's past. Oh, go ahead. Yeah.
Just a kind of question in terms of this verse.
Okay.
Right.
I believe it's the
no, but